Hey, everybody, this is Stelly Efti.
And this is Heaton Shaw.
And in today's episode of The Startup Chat, we're going to talk about how to help your team scale.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life, and hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
We want you to do your best.
So here's one scenario that I want us to kind of start this episode with, which is, you know, you're a startup. You start with a founding team, right? And sooner or later, you're going to start adding some people to your team. A lot of times these first, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5 people in the very, very early days, they're even referred to as, quote unquote, the founding team, right? They might not be founders, but they were there maybe on day one, maybe on day three, but very, very early on. So they've witnessed the entire kind of beginning and inception point of the business and of the product and all that, and played a really big part. And there's lots of content out there on the type of people you need in the very early days, super entrepreneurial, generalist many, many times, people that just can't get shit done, don't need a lot of direction, can thrive in chaos and all that stuff. But eventually, if you're successful, you're going to start hiring more and more people. And the more the business – eventually, as the business, as the startup grows, you're going to have to start, you know, putting a bit more structure into things and making things scale a little bit more, which means that oftentimes these early people, because they're the most senior people in the business, they kind of, as one thing, stumble into management positions, right? They now, somebody was doing marketing, you now hired a few more marketing people, and that person tends to be the person that's going to be taking care of these people and kind of managing them. And often these early day startup kind of founding members, they don't have a management background. They've never done this specific job of managing a marketing team before. And it's a completely different role. It's totally different requirements. And so that is kind of one, I think, very kind of common example where you as a founder, as a startup, you need to help and enable these early employees to become, to scale up and turn from, you know, contributors to being now managers. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on how do you help them make that transition? How much should you invest in them in making that transition? Maybe there's a philosophy out there in some companies that you just hire managers and you let go of the people that were great in their early days or whatever. So I'd love to hear your thoughts and just riff on that, and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah. You know, you can guess. I've seen this scenario and dealt with it myself at my own companies as well as with other folks. And the biggest thing that comes to mind is just a few things. One, if you've got managers that are great in your company that are not you, you want to just high level make sure that the people that are, you know, that you're trying to level up that might not have been responsible for other people leading the team or anything, that they have a pairing with someone else that sort of might be closer to their style of leading or managing. And what I mean by that is, like, if you have a head of engineering. And all of a sudden, you're going to make one of the engineers like an engineering manager. Well, I don't mean all of a sudden. I'm just saying, for example, that person might not know how to manage other engineers. But you have an engineering manager. You have a head of engineering. That person needs to actively coach the other person to work with the other people on the team. So the one thing many of us might not be thinking about when we think about scaling is that, is there a pairing for the person you might try to, you know, you're trying to level up, where they can actually get coached on how to do it. And maybe it's you, CEO, founder, whatever, or maybe it's somebody else. So I think the coaching aspect of, like, how do you deal with team members and their requests, like all that, whether it's things like I want a raise all the way to, you know, I'm quitting, which are two extremes. People need the tools, and they're not very hard. Most of the things are human, but if you've never managed, you're going to feel very emotional, and oftentimes you're going to feel like it's on you and your fault, or, you know, your responsibility or something. And many times it has nothing to do with you, whether you're a good manager or not. People want to leave, or people have requests, and managing them isn't about managing. A lot of times, just like a founder, a lot of times it's just about managing your emotions. And so it's really helpful to have a partner, or not a partner, but like a coach, somebody in the company that's already done it. Now, I have to point that out. And then the other thing I would point out, you know, on a high level, is like, should the person even be leading other people? And is that the best person to do that? Is someone from the outside better? Is there a different team structure that would be better? Because you're basically going into the org chart, which I know startups oftentimes don't want to hear. But for me, when someone's thinking about their team, like, can you just draw it out for me on who's there right now? And I'm really looking for an org chart, because the org chart usually dictates how the team is led. And if you're a hippy dippy or, you know, trying to be totally different, then you might not have an org chart. And, you know, we've seen a lot of scenarios where for a while companies can run without this kind of somewhat official structure and it's loose. But over time, you end up having a structure, whether you know, it's I don't want to say dictated, but if it's dictated by, you know, the leadership, the founders, the management, whatever, or if it's, you know, loosely defined by the team itself. So I like to look at that structure and then figure out, like, you know, whether someone, you know, where someone can fit in, and whether, and most importantly, whether they have the ability to grow into that type of role. And that's really what you're looking for. When you try to put someone on your team into a new role, you're making a call. You're either saying this person is going to be better in that role, or they're going to grow into that role, or the role they currently have is not appropriate for them, and so we need a new role. But there's not very many reasons you move people around or you try to level somebody up. And oftentimes, like, you don't want to make the mistake of picking the wrong person to lead a team and then realizing they can't lead that team. And then, you know, you can just think of all the fallout that happens. Essentially, the impact of that is your business moves slower than it should. So I think it's very critical to determine the potential of somebody and whether they can become a team lead.
I love that. I also love the idea with the pairing. And I'll throw one thing in there that I just saw in a talk that, what's his name again? Oh, Rand Fishkin, I think, from Moz. He gave a talk in Ireland at Business Software. And one thing that he said that I loved was that he was like, he gave a talk about all the mistakes he made and the things that he would tell his younger self. And one of the things was that he would totally make sure that there is a career path within his company that doesn't necessarily evolve around only the track of, you know, if you want to move up in terms of salary, pay, and influence, you have to, there's no other way than you becoming a manager, but that there's two parallel tracks. And one is you wanting to be a manager or leader and then responsible for people, and you can advance in your career all the way to the highest pay grade to senior VP or the CEO, or whatever, a CXO level type person. But there's a parallel track that you can have of staying an individual contributor, but becoming more and more senior and actually mirroring one-to-one the pay grade of somebody that has management responsibilities. And I think that the highest level at
I feel like that's a load of Rand idealism. I really, really like Rand. But he has proven not to be very good at leading a team, right? He's been in and out. He's written about all his troubles. Again, mad respect for Rand, right? But that approach of parallel tracks leads to a lot of politics and a lot of corporate stuff. So in theory, the solution is good of having two tracks. The way I've solved this problem is much more human. We empower the leadership, whoever's leading these people, to help make the right decision for the person. And that decision can be in the company, not in the company. That's actually a fundamental binary one. Then if it's in the company, and I don't, sometimes you do it in different orders, right? Then if it's in the company, it's like, where's the best place for the person where they're going to grow? that's all you're trying to figure out. Where's the best place for the person where they're going to grow? And is that grow in this company? Is that grow not in this company? And then you can determine what I will never call a track, because I don't think there's two. I think there's many for individuals in your company. And the reason I say this is, we've had people that started in customer support at Kissmetrics, and they're heading up product at Kissmetrics. If we had a track of leaders or individual contributors, that would have never happened.
Do you
think that person even left the company and came back?
How big was the overall company in terms of headcount?
We were up to 70 at that point, right? Okay. Once you get, and this is a caveat I'll add, once you get to a bigger size, if you have tracks, you're going to lead to a corporate hierarchy system. Mm. Like, you can just play it out, right? Then you have people fighting for the tracks.
See, so right?
And I've seen that at scale, and it's horrible, to be honest.
But okay, so I love what you're saying. I see what you're saying, but then again, I'm also wondering if you only have, like, okay, so I'm completely with you on the question is always fundamentally, what's the best place for this person to contribute and to grow? And this could be with us or somewhere else, or, and if it's with us, it could be anywhere that person in close proximity to what they're doing right now or not, right? So I love that and I totally subscribe to that. But why is having two tracks more political than having one? Why is, if somebody could be an individual contributor?
You don't have any tracks. You don't have any tracks.
Oh, yeah.
It's political
okay.
to like have a structure. Like it's political okay. in a startup, even up to like 1,000 people, even more
to have tracks. Okay.
Because then people, humans want to pick a track.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
So I get like, it. Crap. I get it now. Right. Yeah. So my, all right. So then I was not even paying that much attention to the track itself, but to the idea that somebody can grow and contribute and get also more value and more ownership in return over time, not just by becoming a manager. Because that's what I see. Everybody just assumes that if you're ambitious, you just assume you have to become a manager once in a while. And a lot of times I'm flabbergasted how many people want to be managers, even if it doesn't seem like it's what they should want to be, because it doesn't play to any of their strengths or the things they really like doing.
Yeah. And I've probably just asked why so many times to team members that approach with that kind of aspect, right? So there's two things here that I got to point out. Like, there's a team member coming to you and saying, I want something, or you going to the team member and saying, hey, we're making some changes. Here's how you're going to fit in, you know, or whatever buy-in you want to get from them. There's a lot of different ways to do it. And I've always seen that when I take the latter approach of like coming to them, it works out so much better because it's more designed around the business and the growth of the business and not designed around this individual and their specific individualistic need, right? And so this greatly will impact how you want to think about whether it's tracks or how you want to think about the person. All I'm pointing out is that like once you have tracks or once you have systems and there's only a few options, people crowd around them, just like saying you have to be a manager to scale the business. So by having two tracks or having too much structure around it, you end up actually, especially early on in a company, not getting the people in the right roles. Well, if you don't have much structure and you're like, look, no matter what, we love this person, we want to do whatever we can to keep them in the company, let's figure out what makes the most sense. That's the kind of approach I would take, right? Then a lot of times, this is way more work than having like a systematic thing, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to figure out like, how is this organism, which is my company, going to react when these changes are made? And are we going to be able to scale faster? Are we going to be able to get to that next place? Because what we commonly forget when we're thinking about all these changes is that we're actually trying to move the company forward, right? And these changes are going to be required in order to do that. And a lot of times they have to do with the people and the structure. So, you know, I think it's obvious that you need more than one option for every person. I think it's also obvious that you need to think about the organism and the organization as a whole. Even if, like, for example, even if somebody loves a person in the organization, if most of the people love them, if they're not willing to change and take a role that's better for the company, and at least the company would believe is better for them, then they need to be taken out of the company, right? And that goes less into the tracks the person has and the way the person needs to develop, and goes much more into how they fit into the system. And that's way more important than the individual and their goals, to be frank, because it's all about the collective goal and figuring out where they fit. And the reason I say that is, it's back to what you said early on. Early team members tend to be generalists, right? And you want to help those generalists scale with the company because, one, they have a lot of knowledge. Two, they probably didn't write it all down and they're really valuable. So the goal would be like, how do we take a bunch of these generalists and then turn it into a structure where we can systematically scale? Sometimes the generalists need to go away because they're better at the early stages or prefer it, right? Sometimes a generalist can scale up and change up. And sometimes a generalist just stay where they are and they get you know, other folks around them, whether it's, you know, people leading them or people, you know, more people parallel to them first and things like that. So to me, it's a structural thing, an organizational design problem first, because you're trying to make a change. But if you're just getting hit with like individual people, like two or three in a month, like with these kind of weird things, there might be, you know, weird things, but these things where they want the change and they're coming to you, it was probably time to step back, look at the org and make some holistic sort of changes. That way you're coming with the changes as, you know, the team that's leading all of this, instead of the team members coming and bubbling up and causing a lot of sort of like what I want to call siloed decision-making, because they're deciding for themselves, right? I don't want to do what I'm doing anymore. And oftentimes that doesn't reflect what needs to be done in the company.
All right. So let's turn this into a practical example, right? Let's say And, you know, there's two extremes. There's the we're just four people at the startup extreme where it doesn't really fucking matter. Or you have the other extreme where you are 200 people now, right? And then you can do a lot more in terms of organizational design and where you put people and how you think about developing people and all that and having kind of multiple people that fit a certain role. But I think a bunch of our listeners will be in the very early days where all this doesn't matter. For those that it might just be interesting to anticipate for the next step. But for the ones that are growing, you might be at 10, 20, 30 people and – you know, you let's say you have somebody that was a great contributor. Now you need to hire a few more people. There's nobody else in the organization that you would put in a manager role that would be better at that. That person has the desire to be good at it. You don't know if they're going to be good at it or not, but you assume they can. You give them that gig, but they make a ton of mistakes because they're early, or you might discover they're really not great at being a manager, but they're really they themselves really want to become good. So now you're in these more tricky situations where what do you do? Do you keep coaching this person and trying to figure out a way to help them? Do you kind of put them in another position, which will always feel to a human like, you know, being kind of public shaming and being officially announced as not quote unquote good enough for something? Do you bring in a new person that has management experience and allow them to be their boss? How do you deal in the and this is clearly still somebody that you love, somebody that creates a lot of value, somebody that culturally has a lot to offer, but it's not quite there yet, or maybe not as quickly as you want it. And of course, you can now sit down and rationally say, we're going to make the assessment. Can I help this person grow fast enough? Yes or no? If yes, let's double down on this. If no, then let's see if they're open to changing what they're doing or bringing somebody else in. But have you – like what is the framework – maybe this is it, but what's the framework at the time where you're still small enough to have resource constraints but big enough to need structure, need to help these people to grow in whatever they're good at or whatever they want to be good at? And sometimes, you know, those things, when they're obvious pointing in different directions, I think the decision is easy. But sometimes you're just not sure if this person is going to be good at something or not, and they really want it, and you think they could be. So you take that step, you figure out they're not growing into that role as fast enough. What do you do to help them scale?
I think there's a right way and a wrong way. So the wrong way is shove them into the role and just think there's potential and let them go and let them do it and maybe coach them along the way. I think that's the wrong way. The right way is when you, because if you're trying to make someone a lead, what I would do is I'd actually get in a meeting with the person that's going to be the lead. Once, you know, people kind of know, and get in a meeting with them and everyone they're going to lead. And I would have the, you know, 10 to 20 minute conversation about, you know, y'all know that, you know, John is going to be leading the team now. And, you know, he hasn't led anybody before. I know we all love John, right? And so it's all of our jobs, including myself, to make sure John is productive as a, you know, team lead here. And that means that if you're being led by him and, you know, you feel like, you know, he could be doing a better job, you should tell him. And if you're not comfortable telling him, tell me, because then I'll go tell him for you, you know? And so I try to create an environment where there's a, you know, and I should caveat and say, I also add in like, this is going to be for 30 days, or this is going to be 60 days, or this is going to be 90 days. And if this doesn't work, we're going to find another solution, right? And I might even give them the options of other solutions. Usually it's not hire someone from the outside. Usually it's a team restructuring that I tend to do instead of hiring someone from the outside, but that's a whole different story because that just takes time and you don't usually have the time. But for me, it's like everyone needs to know what we're doing here and everyone needs to help the person turn into a leader, right? And everyone needs to be on board with that because what happens oftentimes is when you hear that someone's leading the team and they haven't been a leader before, but you have to be led by them, you're going to have some anxiety. So what I'm trying to do in those scenarios is I'm not just trying to optimize for the leader. I'm trying to optimize for the people on the leader's team. And this strategy works any size company. It works especially well in the beginning because you have a very open environment usually where you can say these kind of things and people will help each other because you're still a very collective organization. It's very easy to mentally, you know, like absorb that and say, okay, cool. Yeah. They're going to lead the marketing team and we all have to help them do that. And Keaton's going to watch out and make sure that this person is right and going to help coach them to be, you know, a better leader. And since we trust him as a leader, we're going to trust, you know, this process. So that's kind of what I would do. And I've done that over and over again after, falling flat on my face with putting people into those positions and then feeling like I shouldn't.
That's a beautiful framework. So what happens, on day 30 or 60, whatever it is, when there was enough, whatever you want to call it, negative feedback or friction or things not working out, where it was clear, okay, we tried it. We all tried to help this person be that way. It didn't work out. We'll have to reevaluate.
Yeah, I don't think we wait 30 days and we just reevaluate on the fly. And it becomes very obvious. Within week 3 or 4, it's very obvious what the challenges are, where the person is being stellar at it and where the person's failing, right? So I had a person before that I would say was stellar at it, except he was not very emotional. So when people came to him with like some of those problems, he couldn't really compute it, right? And wouldn't really know what to do with it. So what we did is we created a different system when people had certain types of problems where he would offload it to someone else, right? And say, oh, blah, blah, blah is going to take care of that for you. I totally understand. Boom, right? And the person had an outlet. So I think there's a lot of solutions, but if you don't mock trial it like that and make everyone on board with it, you're not going to be able to it's really about taking this leader. And if they weren't able to do it, respecting them, making sure people gave them the feedback respectfully, and then figuring out, what to do with the person. It's never easy because that person is essentially getting demoted to some extent. But if you set it up so that this is a temporary thing and everyone's colluded, for lack of a better word, into helping the person do this, then it becomes super obvious even within a week. The person sometimes says, I don't want to do this. You know why? All their people they're trying to lead are telling them what's wrong, what they're doing wrong. And it can be a very terrifying thing. But you know how it is. If you're going to lead a team, you better be ready for the harshest feedback.
Yeah. So would you do that when you're a first-time CEO and you hire a bunch of people? Would you go through the same exercise for that? Or being like, all of you people, I've never been a CEO before, so we're going to – sometimes there's founders that are arguing who should be the CEO. Maybe that would be a good framework to test trial, whatever the two founders that both would love to be that.
It just depends how open you are, right? And how much your ego is going to be hurt when people start pounding you with negativity.
Yeah.
Or seemingly negativity, right? And I think most people can't handle that. So I love the idea. It's really good. But I've watched people really break down in front of this kind of feedback, right? Like imagine like somebody who doesn't give feedback a lot, but like is very opinionated and is doing great work and then giving feedback to a new manager, right? It's pretty intense because like the person is now open to feedback or has to be, and the person giving the feedback is empowered to give the feedback. So you actually learn all kinds of stuff about your organization when you can create situations like that. So yeah, I think if two people are debating being CEO of a company, this is a good strategy. Now, if they're already debating though, you know what I'm going to say, right? Stelly questions. They probably shouldn't start a company.
Yeah.
So that's what's up. Is it time for tips?
Yes, it is. Sure is. I just wanted to say there is an episode that we did that's called Batman and Robin. It's episode number 47. You might want to listen to that one about founder dynamics if you are in a situation where two people want to be the same role and they're founders. just saying. All right. So what's your tip? You've given a lot, but let's give one more.
Yeah. Sure. I love this topic. It's a people problem thing. Be human. I know I've said this in other things, but again, not to shit on Rand more, but I don't think he was being human there, and he's a human. Like, he's a humanist, and he's also a feminist, apparently. But he's a humanist, and I think if you're going to be human, you're not going to create tracks in your company. You're not going to create so much structure. You're going to individualize what you have to do, and especially when you're a startup and you're under 20, 30 people, individualize the programs for people and match that to your company and what the needs are, and you're going to have a better time and a faster time figuring out who's right, who's not right, who can lead, who can't lead.
Yeah, I love it. So on top of that, or to play off of that tip, I think is, but it fits into the be human role or human theme, which is be transparent.
Just
make sure that people know what's going on. Make sure that people know what you think and what your thoughts are about their performance and what your, involve people in the decision-making process, involve them in the thinking process. So no matter what happens as you're trying to scale the company, the worst thing that can happen is that you catch people completely off guard and they are totally surprised by whatever you are thinking, doing, or acting on. Doesn't matter if it is, empowering somebody to be a manager or letting somebody go or changing something in the org structure. The worst thing that can happen is that somebody feels like this is absolutely sudden and surprising, and they had no idea on how you arrived at that thought or at the need to make a change or something. Make sure to be transparent all along the way. Sometimes it's hard. It's can be very, very inconvenient to be transparent, but I feel like it empowers people to trust you and to fully grow. And even if they don't like the decision, they will respect them. So I think it's absolutely crucial to be as transparent as you can with your team and with the people individually as you're trying to help them scale. All right, that's it from us for this week.
Bye.
Bye.